Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast, Lead Singer Syndrome. That's what it's called. It's been called that for almost 5 years. Can you believe it? We're coming up on the five-year mark. It's exciting stuff. Today we have an awesome episode, part two of a two-part special with the co-frontmen of Less Than Jake. Today we have Chris DeMakes, I guess kind of the more main singer of the band. And this dude, you know, he's not just Chris from Less Than Jake anymore. He's doing a bunch of stuff outside the band, which is really great to see, including an awesome new podcast. If you like this podcast, you'll love his, I'm sure, especially if you're a musician yourself, if you're interested in songwriting, check it out. It's called Chris DeMakes, a podcast. He's had some mega guests on, including Mark Hoppus. That's really, really cool. So yeah, it's awesome that he's doing that. And I just recorded an episode with him yesterday where I talk about the Silverstein song, My Heroine, which has a pretty interesting story and a lot of stuff I actually, you know, never got to spend a whole bunch of time talking about. And, you know, I've mentioned it so many times on the show why I love the podcast format, especially when it comes to talking to musicians, because the classic 20-minute interview or magazine article of a couple pages, you just don't get enough out of it, you know, to just really learn anything new about the artist. So that's why I absolutely love this format, why I think this show brings something to the table, and definitely why Chris's show also brings something as well. So yes, make sure you check that out. And we got a great episode. Before we get into it, though, a couple new things. So I have started a Twitch channel. And I remember back in the day, I had Matt from Trivium on the show. And I actually, you know, he discussed that he was going on Twitch and that this was something that he was doing. And I didn't know much about it at the time. Man, that was like 3 years ago, I want to say. And obviously, he's on there killing it. Yeah, shout out to Matt from Trivium. What a dude. What a hardworking dude, by the way, man. Go back and listen to some of those episodes, too, from that around the 100 episode mark. I think Matt Hafey was number 99, if my memory serves. But regardless, I'm on Twitch. Get on there. Follow me. It's twitch.tv/ShaneTold. And I'm doing a lot of, you know, stuff, just music, you know, playing some tunes and stuff, of course. But I'm bringing the podcast to life over there. And this Friday, I will be having Brandon of Atreyu, and they've been through a lot recently. He'll be on the Twitch on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. If you, you know, can't make it, that's all right. It'll still be on the podcast feed, you know, all edited up and all pretty and all crisp. But we will be on there talking live as well if you, you know, if you're free at that time. And, you know, it's just something different. Adding a video aspect to the podcast maybe is kind of cool, something that I've wanted to do for a while, but is a lot of work. So, yeah, so that's a kind of a big thing. Also, this is the new shit. That will also be broadcast live. Me and Mike Howell, the best. We jumped on yesterday. Mike dressed up as a pickle, which I really appreciated because I love pickles and it's Halloween. And we talked about the top five albums of the week, as we do. And it went awesome. So yes, subscribe. So yes, follow me on Twitch. Subscribe if you can. Again, the link for that is twitch.tv/ShaneTold. And if you really want to help with the show, definitely check out the All Access Club. I'm starting to add some extra Twitch elements into there as well. You know, some stuff early on, some video stuff on there that didn't exist before, in addition to bonus episodes and merchandise and an amazing community. Shout out to all my sinners. So again, check that out too if you want to help out. It really does go a long way. It's leadsingersyndrome.com/all access. Yeah, busy, right? Lots of stuff. I didn't even get to my email address yet. You can email me too. leadsingersyndrome@gmail.com. The Dodgers won the World Series, huh? You see that? Anyone see that coming? Yeah, I kind of saw that coming. I think everybody saw that coming. But congratulations. I remember 1988, I was like my first foray into baseball. You know, my dad is a massive baseball fan. And I remember watching Kirk Gibson, you know, win that World Series or whatever happened. Now it's all a weird foggy memory, but congratulations to the Dodgers. That's cool. They finally did it. They finally did it. Enough baseball talk. We don't talk about any sports in this podcast. This is all music and super interesting stories, and this was a great episode. So have a listen to my conversation with Krista Makes of Less Than Jake. Dear me, I confess, most days I'm a mess. I still act like I'm with it, but I'm all out of one more shot to give. They don't know about me or what's inside my head, but in the end it's me alone staring at my phone. How did it get so bad? And does it sound crazy that I'd ask? I really want to know.
Hello.
Hey, Chris. What's up, man? It's Shane.
Hey, Shane. How you doing?
Good. Sorry I'm a few minutes late. I guess we talked about doing this like 3 years ago,
and I think it was longer than that.
Maybe. And I still had your old number in my phone, so I'm calling this guy, texting him like, "Hey, ready to go when you are, man." And it was some random person with your old phone number. So I'm sorry to that person.
No problem. That person hates me, by the way.
I've got a couple of those. I'm here with Chris from Less Than Jake. We were talking about doing this like 3 or 4 years ago. We're finally doing it. So much to talk about. I like sometimes feel like it's worth the wait. You know what I mean?
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I have a memory like an elephant, and I don't know why, and it does me no good ever. But I want to say, and how long have you been doing Lead Singer Syndrome?
I'm coming up on 5 years. In fact, I'm like almost at my 5 year anniversary, which is kind of nuts.
Okay, then maybe it was the 26. Were you on the 2016 Warped Tour?
No, I wasn't. No. I came. What happened actually? And I apologize because I bailed on you. I came out to 2 Warped Tour dates. I want to say one was San Diego, and then the next day was like going to be in LA or something like that.
So Pomona or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So I came out, you know, just kind of to hang out anyway, you know, do a couple podcasts. So I had like the plan to do like 3 dudes on, you know, the first day and then 3 more people on, you know, the second day. And you were on the second day. And after, honestly, dude, no matter how many times I've played Warped Tour, you know, you do the tour and it's long and it's hard and like, you know, it's really, really aggressive. It's not the same as going to it. You know, like when you don't have a bus or a place to go. And dude, after one day of podcasts and watching a couple bands, I couldn't do it. I had to bail on the second day. I was like one day of Warped Tour as a punter, you know, is enough for me.
Yeah, I think that was 2016. That's when that was. Yeah. Exactly. So it's been some years, but hey, we're more mature and more, you know, we're better to talk now. So
I guess so. No, so much to talk about. Let's start with the big announcement this week, a new Less Than Jake album, Silver Linings, which is coming out on December 11th. And that's exciting. It's your first album in a while.
Yeah. You know, we've just been, it's funny. We were one of those bands that never stopped touring.
Yeah,
you know, we kept grinding and grinding, and we, you know, we're still touring like we were in our early 20s, and not to make excuses, but we just one thing led to another, and it was just like, wow, we haven't recorded new music in a while. 2017 was our last EP that we put out, and so
yeah,
it was just time, and we started writing songs at the top of 2019. And the end of the year last year, we recorded the record. And then, of course, this year had other plans. And we had about three or four different release dates that we had. And finally, we're just like, we want this thing to come out this year. And so December 11th it is.
Wow. So you've been sitting on this thing for a while then, you know? I mean,
yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's the whole thing is so many records were, you know, slated to come out whenever, you know, starting from March on. And I think a lot of labels and bands and no one really knew what to do, right? I mean, this has never happened before.
Yeah. And in fact, I actually think, it's a great time to release a record right now because people, you know, and not speaking for everybody, I know a lot of people financially are having a really hard time, but a lot of folks aren't out pissing their money away at the bar, concerts, sporting events. Those things aren't around right now. So there is a little disposable income for some folks and, you know, they want entertainment and buying a record is a form of entertainment. So I think that, it's not a bad time to release a record.
No, people can piss their money away over at the Pure Noise web store on some on some new Less Than Jake vinyl.
Well, you know, I've had a number of people say, you know, they've ran out of Netflix and stuff to watch. You know, they're been quarantined and bored. So this gives them something to do, some new music.
Right. No, it's because, you know, for the casual, you know, person wandering around the internet, I guess, and they, oh, there's a new Less Than Jake record. It's coming out in December. Well, you figure this would have been like a quarantine written and released record, but, you know, Silver Lining seems to have those connotations, but it seems like all that stuff was pre-pandemic, you know, and I guess that's why you've had so much time to do some other things like the podcast and writing songs for people, etc.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny, the last year when I got home from recording the record, we recorded it in November, and then we all came home for about 2 weeks, wanted to kind of sit on the roughs, rough mixes for a second, not rough mixes, but the sit on everything that we had recorded.
Yeah.
And then we went back down to Gainesville middle of December for 2 days, did some more backing vocals, a couple of guitar overdubs. So, but during that time I had come home and, it, you know, I hate the term midlife crisis. It wasn't what this was, but certainly I'm middle aged now, and you know, some priorities in my life have changed. I have some small children, and I was kind of thinking, like, what else is there? You know, who am I outside of being Chris from Less Than Jake? You know, because that's who I've always been. And on our records, we were too punk for school back in the day. I never branded myself as Chris DeMakes, which in hindsight was probably a mistake. But, you know, I've had a great career. The band still gives me a creative outlet that will always be there, hopefully. And but I came home and I just started diving into things. I had a friend that had asked me to write a song for her father. I did. And, you know, she paid me handsomely for it. I didn't even ask, you know, for money. And long story short, the light bulb went off and I started writing custom songs and jingles and doing voiceovers for people. And, it's gone through the roof. And aside from that, I started thinking, well, then the pandemic hit in March. I was like, well, what else could I do? And, you know, I've always wanted to produce, but I hate babysitting. I hate getting in a room with a band and, you know, being like, okay, what do you guys got? And you're working from the ground up. So I started thinking, you know, I'd love to come in the 11th hour with bands. I want them to take their song as far as they can, and then I'll come in and take the song from there and produce it and try to tighten everything up. So I've been doing one-on-one live Zoom video sessions. I've been producing songs, collaborating, writing songs with people on Zoom, answering questions about the music business. I've had full bands sit in with me and they're just rifling questions at me and I'm just telling them everything that that I know. So between those two things and the podcast, I've been busier than I've ever been.
Crazy. Well, this is going to make my job very easy because so much to talk about, you know, and I don't even know where to start, but I guess let's start with the new record because we already kind of touched on it. Did you make the record with Bill Stevenson?
No.
Okay, because there's a song about Bill Stevenson on the record, and in the press release, it didn't say who produced the record, so I just was wondering that really quick.
Okay, yeah. So Roger, our bass player, we recorded it at the Moat House, a studio in Gainesville, and Roger produced, along with the band, but he's, the main producer.
Yeah.
But it was pretty much the record was self-produced with Roger, and then we had the Blasting Room mix the record.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So Jason and or Bill or whoever over there, right?
The team, Jason Livermore mixed it, and awesome. Of course Bill oversaw the project.
Well, it sounds great. It's your best record in at least 7 years. So
yeah, exactly.
No, I really do like the record. Becky sent it over to me, and I guess the biggest change from a personnel standpoint, and I don't know how much you want to harp on this, but obviously your longtime drummer Vinny no longer with you guys, and I remember, back in the day hearing about your band and someone telling me, oh, the drummer writes all the songs. I was like, oh, that's weird. And then I later found out, well, he writes, a lot of the lyrics. And, I assume that was true. That's what I've heard before. And to come in now, this is your 9th album. You've done a lot of things. There's the old, you can't teach an old dog new tricks kind of thing. But really what stuck out with me right away listening through the record even just once was how the lyrics are less than Jake. They have the same sort of vibe to them. Like even a song like Bill, that lyrically, that sounds like it could have been on Losing Streak. Lyrically.
Yeah.
And I found that was really interesting that you kind of just tended to gravitate to, all those songs you sang over the years lyrically, but maybe you didn't write.
Yeah, well, a couple things with that. Yeah, so there's a misconception among people that aren't musicians that they don't know what the actual term songwriter means. With all due respect to Vinny, yeah, he wrote 95% of our lyrics, lyrical ideas in the past, and but Roger and I have always written the music and the melodies. So that aspect of it hasn't changed. But lyrically, we were in the same band with Vinny for 26 years. So as far as the lyrics having continuity with that, we're still writing from our perspectives now, but it's still holding on to what the band is. And certainly Roger and I wrote lyrics over the years. We'd take – a lot of times Vinny's stuff was just like – a page just of phrases that we would build a song around. Other times it'd be full lyrics that he had written. So, and to answer the second part of your question, it was, and I've been asked this quite a bit, it was never weird for me. I met Vinny when I was 15 years old. So, and he's a little bit older than me. So he was like my older punk friend, and we had a band together in high school, where I was in high school. And, we came from a really small town. There was no one really to sing. So he's like, hey, I was known as one of the singers in town. So I got this gig, and we had a band, and him and I would just sit around after practice, and we started writing these other songs that when I went off to college ended up being less than Jake. So I was always given sheets of paper and lyrics from him since I was 15 years old.
Wow.
So yeah. So for me to sing somebody else's lyrics, and I've had people say, well, how do you get into the emotion of the lyrics, and how does it, how do you sell it, so to speak? How do you sell that lyric because you didn't write it? It's like, well, that's all that I've ever known. So it wasn't ever weird to me or forced. In fact, I could sing anybody's lyrics. And if I like what I'm reading, I'm going to feel it, and I'm going to be able to give it that emotion to be able to sell it, I feel.
Of course. Yeah, absolutely. That's like someone saying, oh, you read that book. Well, how do you feel a connection to that book? You didn't write it. It's like, well, I know I didn't write it. I can still feel something when I consume, art. That does say, though, like, since you're 15, you've kind of had this, I don't want to call it a formula because that sounds very non-artistic, but you've done things with the sort of same procedural way. And now, all of a sudden, at however old you are, you must be getting close to 50. Am I wrong?
Oh, you're getting close. Yeah, no, I just turned 47.
47. You're at the kind of time in your life where it's like, okay, now I've got to do this myself, or obviously with the help of Roger, I assume probably helped you out a lot too. But was there a lot of stress or fear going into this kind of for the first time, or did it come pretty naturally?
No, you know, I got to be honest with you. And I don't say this self-deprecating to the band. There was absolutely zero fear because, you know, Shane, we're a legacy band. If we never made a record after Anthem, you know, we built a career out of those records. We could go and just play those songs for the rest of our career. And the fans would probably, you know, the majority of fans, of course, we got those super, super fans that want to hear new music, but those fans, you know, I could fart into a microphone and they're going to love it. So, it's kind of like but there wasn't pressure, you know, because we have this body of work that people love and we're so stoked that we have that. And that's never going to go away. People are going to come see us play because they want to relive those memories and those songs. And that's a great position to be in, you know. So for us to write new music is exciting. We still love creating and doing new music. And so far, releasing the first single, the it's been so positive. The outpouring has been so positive. It sounds like us. So, you know, it doesn't stray too far from the, and I don't mind it being called a formula. It doesn't stray too much from what Less Than Jake does. So, you know, I think that we approached it how we do any other record. We were just excited to go write a record and spend time together doing it.
Well, yeah, that's very honest. A lot of artists in your position, even if they deep down felt like that, they might not come right out and say it. So, yeah, that's awesome. I mean, you guys have had such an incredible career for so long. I remember the first time I saw your band was the Warped Tour in 1997. It was at the London, Ontario date. There was no Toronto date that year. So we piled in my friend's dad's car and we drove down and saw you guys play on, you know, there were two stages. One was kind of a decent stage and then the other was the back of a truck, like a trailer.
That's where
you played. Yeah.
yeah, that was our first Warped Tour, yeah. And that was kind of our introduction to Canada and just how explosive punk rock was, especially in Montreal, Toronto, and Vancouver. It was insane at that time. And it was so cool to be able to, even though they're, you know, you guys are just our neighbors to the north. I had never been to Canada, and here we are. And there's just people going berserk and ape shit for our band. It was a great feeling.
Well, seeing your set was, to me, it was a big game changer at the time because I'd never seen a band have as much fun as you guys did. And, you know, sure, like that day, I think Blink-182 played that day, you know, and there were where they were just about to emerge, you know, like Dude Ranch had just come out or whatever. And, you know, there Mill and Colin was there. And of course, there were the bigger bands like Lagwagon and Pennywise. You know, I watched all those bands that day. But, you know, on the car ride back, you know, hour and a half back to where we lived outside Toronto, you know, we put on Less Than Jake Losing Streak. You know, that was the album we wanted to listen to. Like, there was a big takeaway from that performance. And then obviously we burned out that CD over the years. But, you know, did you guys know at the time that you were onto something with your performance and everything? I mean, you know, it's easy to say 23 years later, you did or you didn't. But, you know, the fact remains that you're still here. And a lot of those bands have kind of went away or faded away or stopped, you know. And it's kind of interesting that when I was a 16-year-old kid, I had that kind of reaction to your music and your show.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I've heard that before. And I kind of know why. You know, we were a great live band before we were a great recorded band, you know, before we had, you know, before we learned our song craft and learned how to sing, you know, well, and learn how to actually play our instruments before, you know, we were a very sloppy band when we started out, but the live show was always fun. People always took something away from it. You know, we had a motto early on, okay, well, look out in the crowd, guys, you know, be some bar in the middle of Podunk, Florida on a Wednesday night. It's like, no one here is going to like us, but God damn it, they're going to remember us. And, and we'd go out and raise hell. We would say shit. I mean, we had to fight our way out of some redneck bars in Florida.
Oh, I bet.
You know, we cut our teeth in one of the most hostile environments ever. It's like, you know, happy, joyous ska music, the Southern California thing. We weren't that. We were from Florida, you know, and there wasn't many bands doing ska punk in the early 90s in Florida. So, you know, we worked incredibly hard. We knew we were onto something early. And before we ever left outside of Florida to tour, we were starting to build up followings around Florida. You know, we'd go play Daytona and there'd be 40 people there the first time. We'd play with a local band. And then the next time we went, it wasn't like there was 45 people or 50. The audience doubled. It was like 80 to 100 people. And then, you know, 6 months into that, 7 months in, you know, we were turning up to Daytona and there was 150, 200 kids there to see us going absolutely apeshit. And then we were going to Tampa, and then we started going to Orlando, and then we were doing Fort Lauderdale, and we kind of were just, now we were starting to land bigger tours. We got opening gig for the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones. I remember Goldfinger and Bad Religion rolled through, and we got on their show. So local promoters were starting to add us because they saw the value, and we were bringing ticket, you know,
right,
people into the building. So, you know, we knew we were onto something. We felt it. We were our own PR machine. I had five like-minded individuals that we worked harder than any band out there.
Yeah.
Bar none at that time. I can say that unequivocally. We'd get up, we were getting 300 to 400 letters a week by the time Losing Streak came out. We would sit around at a round table in between tours. We'd divvy up the mail in the morning, brew a pot of coffee, and get stoned and sit there and write people back all day.
Wow.
And,
wow.
You know, we
it's
were,
like some
we were,
Beatles shit. That's crazy.
You know, we were a machine. To this day, people come up to me and they bring their letters to the show and want me to sign the letter I sent them in 1996.
Wow. That's so rad, you know, but that's the thing, like that, the kind of grassroots, and I don't want to go too far, you know, from the story right now, but it's a good point, you know, that idea of super grassroots touring, you know, a promotion of your band, you know, you drive up to Daytona and it's word of mouth and you play with other local bands and, you know, you're answering literal, you know, fan mail on paper. What you have to send a stamp to some, you know, using a stamp. These days, what is that? Does that exist? Is there, like, if you're a new artist, is there any way to do that? Just short of, you know, seeing someone in person and saying, you know, thank you. It's crazy. Like, is that must just be dead now.
Well, it exists digitally if you think of it from this aspect. So when I do these one-on-one live video consultations with people, and
right,
they'll say, how do I get my music out there as a solo artist? Or how do I get our band to get noticed? And I say, you're only as popular as the fans that follow you. And each fan is worth 1,000. And what I mean by that is that, no, you're no longer going to get a letter in the mail and write them back and stick it in the envelope and lick the stamp and put it on and put it in the mailbox. But you are going to digitally write each and every one of those people back. To this day, Instagram, all Less Than Jake socials, we write people back. No matter what, they'll say, man, you know, Losing Streak was my favorite album growing up. Thank you. I'll write it back. Thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it. Just that touch back
right
to that fan, they're going to tell 10 people. And those 10 people are going to tell 10 people. And that's what we've built this on. To this day, we still follow what I call the analog model in a digital world. No, we're not licking the stamp and putting it in the mailbox, but we're still writing those people back. We're still letting them know about our music. All five of us in the band, we're a machine. This is constant. It's every day we get up, we communicate through text. First thing in the morning, hey guys, we got to put this post out there. Hey guys, we got to do this. Constant communication.
I love it. I mean, you answered my question, I think, about when I look back to 1997 Warped Tour and those bands and where did they go? I mean, I think there's a secret there. Absolutely. You know, one thing I remember, but you said you have a memory like an elephant earlier. I can remember literally being in that backseat of that car and my friend's dad, he picked us up. He said, I'm coming at whatever time. And I remember Pennywise was just about to go on and we had to leave before Pennywise went on and we were all bummed out about that. But I remember, you know, sitting in that car and passing around the booklet, you know, the CD booklet, and seeing that you guys were on Capitol Records and
yeah,
feeling so strangely conflicted about that, as a 16-year-old punk and not really understanding, first of all, how that happened, you know, that a band like this ska punk band, because this is like a new genre, you know, and
sure,
you know, and you guys are saying fuck in all your songs and like, it just didn't seem to me like this made any sense. And excuse me. And honestly, all these years later, looking back, it still doesn't really make sense now that I know about the music industry. How the hell did you guys get signed to Capitol? How did that happen?
Yeah, you know, our A&R guy that signed us, and he signed us to Warner Brothers too. So we had a couple, you know, we're like a cat with nine lives in terms of labels. You know, we've been on tons of labels.
Yeah.
And he I've always joked that we're a pop band disguised as a punk band. He could hear Roger and I's melodies, they're pop melodies, and right. they get stuck in your head. And he saw the greater picture in that, and he heard, you know, out of the rough exterior of the really fast drum beats and the buzzsaw guitars and the loud horns, he could hear these songs within that. That I think the fans did too. But I mean, for a commercial level or a guy at a label that's trying to move units, so to speak, he heard a bigger picture here. You know, the one thing I can say about Capitol at the time, you know, there was a lot of cries in the 90s of, oh, you're a sellout and this and that. And
yeah.
And I personally never paid any attention to any of that shit. I always thought it was hilarious. It was like, you know, no one's calling Michael Jordan a sellout because they gave him a $15 million contract, you know, but you're going to call a musician a sellout. I never bought into it. In fact, my band at one point was like, you can't say that in an interview because like people be like, so, you know, what's the decision to sign a Capitol? I'm like, man, I want to live in Malibu, don't you? You know, like I'd love to play to 10,000 people a night and sell a gazillion records. That's not like the ultimate goal. I love to play music, but if that happens, I want to reach as many people as I can. And Capitol, to their credit, when they came along, that record is just a progression from our previous album, Pez Corix. It's just a little more well put together, but I listened back to Losing Streak. It's pretty raw and unpolished. It does not sound like a major label record.
No, not at all. And I think that's what was so surprising about it. Even my 16-year-old ears could hear that, you know?
Yeah. They let us be who we are. It wasn't until Hello Rock View when we got a producer who was, you know, we were one of the first records ever on Pro Tools, Hello Rock View.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was one of the very first records on Pro Tools, and also one of the very first records on, you know, of course, there was some digital editing going on that preceded Pro Tools, but this was also one of the first records to use auto-tune on the vocals.
Crazy.
And
crazy.
So, you know, but yeah, Losing Streak was that was us. I mean, I remember the actual guitar track, the clean guitar for Johnny Quest Thinks We're Sellouts on that record. That was live off the floor. We went in to recreate it, and the producer was like, why are you going to retract that? It's fine. You know, so there was definitely a live vibe among, we played it live together, and we just kind of kept the drum track. We'd do like, I think most of the bass and drums were kept. I don't even think we did bass overdubs. So it was very raw and it sounded like us. So I never had an issue with the whole sellout thing. It just, it went in one ear and out the other with me.
Yeah. No, that's funny. And I know that yesterday was the 22nd anniversary of Hello Rock View. It came out 22 years ago, which is a cool milestone. I remember buying that record the day it came out, actually. And
awesome. Can I say one more thing real
quick?
I still don't live in Malibu, but anyways.
Where do you live these days?
I live north of Knoxville, Tennessee. I live in the middle of the mountains. It's beautiful and it's quiet. And it's great.
That's awesome. No, that sounds amazing. But yeah. Back to Hello Rock View. Yes. So 22 years ago, I remember buying the record, and it's really, really interesting that you say that about, first of all, the record being on the first Pro Tools record or one of the first, and also the thing about the auto-tune. I always thought, like, I never liked the horns on the record. The horns sounded weird to me. Like, even this is like, I'm 17, you know, and the album comes out and I listen to it in my mom's car or whatever. And that record, I'll be completely honest with you, it didn't do to me what Losing Streak did to me. And I didn't like that record nearly as much. My friends all thought I was crazy. They're like, this record's like the last one, but even better. And they're going to be the biggest band in the world. And all my best friends are metalheads. This song's like, and I didn't think the record was bad or anything like at all, but it didn't, there was something about it to me as a kid that didn't quite hit me where I wanted to be hit.
Well, I did a podcast. No, it's a spot on assessment. I did a, podcast recently with Howard Benson, who Howard produced the record, and Howard's went on to do everybody from you name it.
Yep. Yep.
The biggest stars in the world. And Howard and I have been fantastic friends, since Hella Rock for You. But anyways, you know, Howard, on my podcast, and we've talked about it over the years, is the first to admit he was the kid with the new toy.
Right.
And it was this thing, Pro Tools. And really, the only people that ever used auto-tune prior to musicians, it was used for things in NASA, for space stuff. I don't know exactly what it was being used
really?
For. It was to change like radio waves and frequencies or something. That's what it was designed for.
Wow.
And yeah. And so Howard gets these toys, and he's self-admitted about this, that he's like, yeah, man, I squashed the horns. I fucked the horns up on that record, and they sound like synthesizers. They sound terrible. You know, and it's been discussed over the years. Well, what if you could go back and remix the record? And I'm a purist in the sense it's like, nope, that's what the record was. Enough people love the record. I'm not going to go fuck up history. So
yeah.
I stand by the record for what it is. It was a snapshot in time. But no, I'm not a fan of the horns on that record, and either is anybody in my band.
That's funny. Auto-tune, you know, for you just to come out and just say, oh, yeah, there's auto-tune on that record, or we use auto-tune, that's still a thing. There's a bit of a – it's a faux pas. You know, people don't talk about it even to this day. I'll be the first to admit every Silverstein record has auto-tune on it. You know, they just do.
Well, I've never had a lot of them. I've never had a problem admitting we use auto-tune because Roger and I can pull it off live.
Right.
That's where it's at. You know, are we perfect? No, we're humans. But we go out and we sing like motherfuckers together. We always have. You know, with that said, we use, much like I'm sure Silverstein does, we use Pro Tools as a tool, not a crutch. And you know the bands that use it as a crutch because you go see them live and they can't sing worth shit. And So that's kind of your answer with Pro Tools. We you know, it's it definitely has its moments, and I use it all the time because I don't have to work as hard.
It does save time, for sure. No question. So let's talk about the podcast. So Krista makes a podcast. You just started it a few months ago. You've had pretty eye-popping names already on the show. Talk to me about this concept, how this came about, and how it's kind of been going so far. Has it been more work than you thought? Have you really enjoyed it? Have you made some new friends?
Yeah, it's kind of been all the above, Shane. It really has. It's been, you know, So I'm working, my manager's name is Chris Folios, and Chris plays bass in a Pittsburgh band called Punchline. They used to be on Fueled by Ramen.
Oh, I love them.
Yeah, yeah. So Chris did this animated video last year for Bowling for Soup and Less Than Jake. It was a tour we had. And so I started doing these custom songs, and I had called Chris up back in March of this year. And I said, hey, I'm doing these songs. I kind of want you to do a video for it, and an animated video. And we just started talking, and it was weird. It was like within a week, we were talking 4, 5, 6 times a day. And one thing led to another. And so Chris is the producer of the podcast. He's also my manager now, outside of Less Than Jake. And he was the one that suggested, hey, you need to do a podcast. And my initial reaction was, nah, everyone does a podcast. And most of them are fucking horrible. And it's just me being honest. I don't listen to a lot of podcasts. And I'm not saying this to you because I'm on your podcast, but you know, you have an amazing podcast. You're what you've built with yours is, you know, congratulations.
Well, thanks,
man. Awesome. It's awesome. People love it. You got great listenership. It's obvious that you're doing something right. But you know, any Johnny Come Lately can do a podcast now in their bedroom. Everyone has the internet. So I was hesitant, and Chris basically just said, well, but you got to think of it outside of just a podcast. He says, you know, so many people. He said, I think you should have a theme for this. I think because you're doing your custom songs, you should have a theme of songwriting, not general songwriting.
Yeah.
You pick one song, a career defining song from that artist's career, and you break that song down over the course of that episode. And I said, oh, okay, you know, and people would ask me over the years, you should do a podcast. And I always was the same thing. Nah, everyone has a podcast. No one wants to hear from me. And I went to sleep that night and I woke up the next morning. And before my kids got up, it was early and my gears were just grinding. I could not stop thinking about what Chris had proposed.
Right.
So I get my phone and I start doing Rockstar 101 texting. I just texted like 20 of my buddies that you know, in the industry. And that following week, I think that was on like a Thursday, that following Monday, I recorded my first episode. I think I did 10 or 11 episodes that first week I recorded.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, okay, because I'm kind of an all or nothing guy. I went boom. I went straight in. And Chris, he's the producer. He edits the episodes and we talk about it each week. We recently got picked up my booking agent, Dave Shapiro, at Sound Talent Booking.
Also my booking agent.
Exactly. Dave started Sound Talent Media, which is basically a podcast network that I am now a part of. And so now we're just trying to get more listeners and go even further with it. But it's been, you know, all the things you said at the top, it's been amazing. I look forward to it every day. I got Mark Hoppus today at 3:00. We're going to talk about What's My Age Again.
Wow.
And yeah. And,
I'm jealous. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah. And well, I'm jealous of your roster. You got D. Snyder. I don't want to hear about it. All right. So
I'm sure D will talk to you. He would love to talk about a song.
Yeah. I know D. I reached out to his management. He's kind of in between things right now, but eventually. But you know, Shane, what I'm hoping for, and I'm starting just now. I'm closing in on 6 months of doing this. It's been a lot of work, as you know, to launch a podcast, even with the Rolodex of people that I know. But now I'm starting to get emails and stuff from labels and from managers. Hey, can you feature my artist? So once that started happening, I realized, you know what? I think I'm kind of onto something here, and it's been beyond my wildest expectations, and it's been very fulfilling.
No, absolutely, and I'm sure you're starting to get people asking you this question, saying, "Well, what about Less Than Jake? What about your songs? What song, you know, would you pick if you were on your own podcast?" Do you have one you'd like to, you would you know, that has interesting story?
Yeah, there's a number of them actually. Sure. And it's funny. One of the first episodes I had was Roger, because I have a Facebook group. And for everyone listening, if you'd please join, it's a lot of fun. There's a great interaction. We're over 2,000 people in the group. It's on Facebook. It's Krista Makes a Podcast Facebook group. And that's where, it's basically the website for the show. And that's where everybody goes. And, it's free to join. They just go there and they'll give requests. And Roger from my band was one of the people that was requested early on. So I had him on one of the first episodes, and that was one of the highest rated episodes. So yeah, I'm going to be on. Yeah. And that's the great part of having Chris, my producer, because he's going to be the one that interviews me for my own show eventually.
There you go.
So
can you, you know what song you're going to do? Can you spill the beans?
Well, you know what? The only one really, because, we do something that we talked about recently. I think the first one I want to do, because it's an older song, is I want to tell the story of Johnny Quest Thinks We're Sellouts. So it's a pretty cool story.
Okay. Well, I look forward to that. Everybody subscribe to Chris's podcast because it's a good one. Lots of
thank
stuff.
You.
There's Matt Skiba, Laura Jane Grace, Rick Nielsen. That's like, you know, and I guess Mark Hoppus will be on the show probably in the coming weeks too. So that's very awesome.
Yeah. It's been, and more so than anything. I'm sure you've felt this too. I mean, you're obviously professional. You keep your appointments and you try to stay as organized as you can. And so in one sense, it's I hate using the word job, but you know, it's your job, but man, this is just a labor of love. I love this. I love talking to people. And some of my favorite episodes have been people that I don't know. I just did an episode with Robin Wilson from the Gin Blossoms the other day.
Oh,
and
wow.
It was awesome, man. And Robin, he was just, I don't know. It's a different world. They were everywhere in the 90s, but that wasn't part of my scene and I had never met him before. And so that's really what I'm looking forward to now, is to branching out. And, you know, I had a great springboard to jump off of with all the people that I know in my world But now I'm starting to get outside of that. I'd love to get into rap and country. And if you have a good song, I want to talk to you, basically.
No, perfect. I think that's the way to go. Honestly, you have a great concept. And, you know, similar to this podcast, I'll talk to any lead singer. The genre doesn't matter. It's just about, you know, the art of that, you know, art of singing. And for your show, the art of songwriting. And that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, you know, I think there's going to be detractors. There's some people that are too punk for school, and I appreciate that. They love me and my band because of how we sound like, and they love punk and ska or whatever. But you know, there's diminishing returns with just staying in your own world. And Less Than Jake always knew that. You know, we always tried to do other things. It wasn't just playing with punk or ska bands. We took the Bon Jovi tour. We took the Linkin Park tour. Right. You know, we took some stuff that was really left of center because. We realized that, you know, our music can transcend genres and we wanted to be all inclusive.
No, absolutely. It's funny. I was trying to work in a segue there as you were talking to talk about the Bon Jovi and the Snoop Dogg tour, because I didn't know you toured with those bands until yesterday when I was looking at your press release and I saw that. I was like, Bon Jovi and Snoop Dogg? So, talk to me about those two artists. Did you?
Yes,
I mean, it can be weird. A lot of people that don't, you know, haven't been on tour before, they don't understand, like, just because you're on tour with a band doesn't mean you actually hang out with them, you know, but maybe.
Right. I'll tell you. So Bon Jovi, it was the summer of 2000. It was around maybe July. We get a phone call, our manager, and said, and our manager at the time was Kevin Lyman. From Warped Tour.
Oh, wow.
And Kevin gets a phone call that Bon Jovi wants us to open up their fall tour. We're like, what? It's like, yeah. Well, what happened is in July, Bon Jovi, now they hadn't been around for about 5 years. John kind of went into acting. The band was laying low. They might have played some concerts overseas, maybe Indonesia or something. But John's a smart dude. You know, America was in the height of grunge. He was kind of looked at as this 80s band that was washed up. And so at the time, Bon Jovi had reached out to like Sugar Ray, Smash Mouth, Dishwalla, Collective Soul, all these bands that were like the in bands at that time. And they all turned the tour down like, Bon Jovi, that's not a good look for us.
Right.
Because the album and the single hadn't popped yet. About a month later in August, MTV was no longer catering to Bon Jovi's crowd, but who was? Well, their sister parent company, VH1. And I wasn't watching MTV in the late 90s. I was watching VH1 because they were catering a little bit more to my demographic. Well, guess what? They put out the It's My Life song and it blew up.
Yeah.
Completely blew up. So when I first got the call, I was thinking Bon Jovi, man, we might be doing 3,500 to 5,000 seat theaters. This is going to be rad. Sure. And we took the tour, and then we see the routing, and it was 3 weeks of basketball and hockey arenas. Everyone sold out to the gills, 20,000 people a night.
Wow.
And it was a trip, man. And it's funny to think back now. John, he seemed old to us. John was 38 on that tour.
So funny. You know? Like, I know.
And dude, they kicked ass every night. They were so good. They were so good. It was men and women from 12 to 60 years old in the audience, just singing every word. And we had a ball. The crew loved us because we weren't rock stars. We came from the punk background. We showed up with our own risers. We'd push our shit on stage with mics clipped already to the drums. All they had to do was plug in. Their crew loved us. We got our shit on and off the stage. And there was no rock star bullshit.
Yep.
They gave us a broom closet, some towels, a case of water, and two bottles of wine a night. And we were happier than pigs and shit.
I love it. I love that. I can just picture every aspect of that. That is.
Oh, we went so nuts. Great. There's one night I walk out of the restaurant. There's Heather Locklear standing there drinking a glass of wine. She was married to Richie Sambora.
Yeah.
The dudes in Skid Row come out one night. I'm partying with Snake from Skid Row. We're getting wasted on my bus. I'm like, is this happening? Like it was fucking rad, dude. Bill from Firehouse came out one night. Like all these 80s like icons that I grew up with were like showing up, and it was awesome.
great. And
then, so the Snoop Dogg thing, that was the Project Revolution tour. It was Linkin Park, Korn, Linkin Park, Korn, Snoop Dogg, Less Than Jake, and The Used. Can't get more weird than that. And, that was, about 6 weeks across the U.S.
Wow.
Amphitheaters sold out every night. It was a wild one. It was sponsored. One of the sponsors was, Heineken and Amstel Light, and they had a tent. It always seemed like the tent somehow ended up right outside our fucking bus, but it was the backstage VIP tent, and it was free drinks for guests and family. And man, we lived it on that tour. It was great, and it brought the band a whole new legion of fans. The print and press promotion alone from that tour, it just got our name out to a different audience.
It's so funny you bring up the, you know, I'm thinking about the old days of Warped Tour when they used to have the monster truck and there was like a little back door you could go in and they have like a little artist lounge in there where you could, you know, they'd have like vodka and all that stuff. And but the thing was, is you had to mix it with Monster if you wanted it to be free.
Yeah.
And it was, by the end, it was like, okay, just give me, I don't know, give me a glass of vodka and just like, please pour as little Monster as you can into that.
Yeah.
Just in case somebody walks by.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to get fucked up, but that tastes like shit. All right, here we go.
Oh my goodness, dude. Well, what else to tell the people before I let you go? The new record is out December 11th, Silver Linings. The podcast is coming at you week after week.
You got it. Yeah. If you would like a custom song, if you'd like to do one-on-one video consultations, if you'd like a custom song with animation, Chris Fafalios, my manager, does animation. We also offer that. You can write me at chrisdemakes@gmail.com. I also have my first book coming out on December 8th. It's called Blast from the Past. And on October 15th, I'm going to be announcing. Is this episode going to be out by the 15th?
I think it, maybe if, it if, might be, it'll if, be close. It'll be close.
If not, it doesn't matter. October 15th, I'm releasing. Basically I'm recording a solo album right now, like two or three songs at a time.
Like a year and a half,
the record will be out, but I recorded two songs as a launch for the book. One song is called Blast from the Past. That'll be premiering on October 15th to launch the book pre-orders. And, that'll be out in December. So I got the book, the band, the record Silver Linings will be out December 11th. And, yeah. And if you want me to be on your podcast and, I like your podcast, I'll be on it.
Okay. Well, well, talk to me about this book really quick. I didn't hear anything about a book. Blast from the Past. What is it about?
Okay. So on December 5th, 2018, I woke up that morning. I had recently moved and I was going through my studio, putting everything back up. I've saved everything that the band has ever done over the years. It looks like a record store for one band, Less Than Jake. It's a museum, essentially. I've clipped out articles. I've filed it in scrapbooks. I've saved everything we've ever put out. So wow. I was going through photos and I decided I'm going to post a photo with a story. And I did that on Instagram that morning. And I said, I'm going to do one of these every day for 365 days. And JR, my sax player, wrote and he goes, you won't make it 2 weeks. And I said, you son of a bitch, you watch me. And so it was about 3 weeks in. It was about middle of December of 2018. Let's say December 20th or so. I woke up one morning. I did that morning's post in the story and the light bulb went off. I said, I'm writing my book one story at a time. This isn't going to be your traditional book. Hi, I'm Chris DeMakes. I was born in Michigan in 1973, blah, blah, blah. I've read every autobiography and rock biography there is. I love them. I got a bookshelves filled with them. Now I got a Kindle full on my phone of them. But
have you read the Bad Religion book yet?
I have not. No, it's on my list.
It's on my list. I just got it in the mail finally. I can't wait to read it. But yes, go
right
on.
No, yeah, I'll try to be brief as I finish up. So I had started a book in the past. David McWayne from Big D and the Kids Table, actually, he's written a couple books and he gave me like this outline to follow. It was really helpful, but I don't know. I'd get a few paragraphs in and I just like, you know what? I want this to be something different. I didn't know what it was. So that morning I woke up, I'm like, I'm writing my book one story at a time. So after 365 days, of doing so. I then took all of those photos and stories. And of course, I had to edit them and redo the stories a little bit for the book because there was, you know, certain time things. Like I would say something on Instagram that didn't need to be in the book. But for the most part, it was what I put out there. And so I binded it into a book. I got a bunch of bundles and stuff coming with the book. There's a poster. There's a calendar. I got the music that's coming with it. So it's great. And, the book looks awesome. It's, being released through Smart Punk Records. They've done a fantastic job. Cool. It's their first book and, we're excited.
That's great. Wow. So much stuff, man. And the solo stuff as well. I was going to ask you, I have in my notes also solo stuff ? Cause I always wondered, when's it coming? I hear about it. I hear about him recording, but I haven't,
yeah.
I think there's like one song on Spotify.
Well, I've put out solo songs. I'm mostly for charity over the years. I've done some stuff. You can also check out my YouTube page. If you go to my YouTube page, I got everything I do, all my custom songs, all my collaborations, which I won't even get into that. I've been working with a cover band while in quarantine. We've been releasing cover songs. We got a new one coming out next week. So I've just been staying busy with projects and collaborations. And, as far as solo stuff, I've always been fulfilled with less than Jake. I never wanted to dilute what the band did. No disrespect to anybody that does that or anybody in my band that had other projects, but I did less than Jake for the first half of my life. And now the second half of my life, I finally decided what else is there for Chris to make. And, this year has been the start of that. And, the solo record, I'm working on 2-3 songs at a time. And a year and a half from now, I'm going to put them all together. And, I've been playing solo acoustic shows since 2014. I do about 7 or 8 shows a year, and those are just for fun. But this is something different. This is, an actual solo thing outside of the band that's going to be recorded and documented.
Awesome. Well, Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to speak with me, and good luck on everything coming up.
I really appreciate it, and best of luck to you. I really love your podcast. I mean that. Thank you.
Thanks, man. So there it is with Chris DeMakes. And what a great conversation. I love hearing about the old stories and the insight from a wise, wise man. And, you know, I just did his podcast yesterday and talking to him and how he dissects songs and really spends time, you know, and does such a great job. Even with My Little My Heroin song, I really, really did appreciate that. And definitely don't miss his show. And don't stop listening to mine, though, okay? I'm still here. I'm not going anywhere. Episode 250, it's coming. We are going strong 5 years later. And thank you, everybody, for the love and the support. So this is a tricky time right now. I'm not talking about November 3rd. This is a tricky time because I don't know what Less Than Jake song to play. But, you know, we talked about Losing Streak and what that record meant to me, you know, when I first heard it, Warped Tour 1997. Shout out to Andy Lewis and his father, Pete, and Bri Robinson. We were in the car together coming back from London, and Bri bought this CD, and I still listen to it all the time. I really do. And there's this 2-song combination on the record. Just such a great ending to one song. And then it just goes into this other song so well. And it's probably 2 of my favorite, you know, punk songs together, kind of in a row in this moment. So I'm going to play them both. This is, I think it's track 4 and track 5 from Less Than Jake's Losing Streak. Sugar in Your Gas Tank and Shindo. Here they are on Lead Singer Syndrome. Peace and love. See you next week.
Feel with this, that's
change it all, it all, it all, it all, it all. Something's out there.